think we can actually do 29 because I said enough on 28.
Ascharyah hat pashyati kashchidenam.
Ascharyah hat vadati tathaiva chanyah.
Ascharyah
hat vadati shrunoti.
Ascharyah hat chayna shrunoti.
Shrutva apyenam vedana chayva kashchit.
Ascharyavat
pashyati kaschit enam ascharyavat vadati tathaiva cha anyaha ascharyavat cha enam anyaha shrinoti shrutva api enam vedana cha eva kaschit. This is a famous verse. It's similar to other verses we have. Ascharyavat. Ascharyavat, that vat affix is an indeclinable. It means that which is like a wonder. Yeah. So it says, Ascharyavat pashyati kaschit. One person, kaschit means like someone, one given person, kaschit. Sees pashyati enam, this enamatma, the self that I am, as a wonder. Ascharyavat pashyati kaschit enam. One person sees this as a wonder, this atman, the self, as a wonder. Then ascharyavat vadati tatha eva cha anyaha. And another person speaks of this as what a wonder. Then ascharya vatcha enam anyaha shrinoti. Another person hears the self. Yes, what a wonder. And then shrutva api enam veda nachaiva kastita. And then another person, even though having heard this, you know, doesn't get it, does not know. So in Shankara says, even though having heard it, having listened to it, having been spoken about it, so many things. But even then, that person does not understand. Naveda doesn't know. That's also a wonder. And then you can take this in a different way. This ascharya vat, this vat affect is an indeclinable, really. So it can go with anything. So it can go with anamatma. This self is a wonder. Someone who sees this self, what a wonder is the self, you know. Talks about it, what a wonder is that self. Or the ascharyavat can go to the one who sees, what a wonder. Like the, so it's kaschit ascharyavat. What a wonder is that person who sees the self. What a wonder is that person who speaks of this self. What a wonder is that person who hears about this self. And then also, what a wonder is that person who, having heard of it, doesn't realize. Both sides are a wonder. So Shankara breaks this in either way, which is perfectly legitimate. In fact, in Sanskrit, even a compound, you know, when some words are run together to make one word, it can be broken in many different ways, legitimately. So it's just a matter of whether the way of breaking that compound works or not in the context of the shastra. And similarly, when you had adverbs and whatnot, or sentence structure, if it can be read in a different way, and that way is still in keeping with the shastra, then Shankara will give both interpretations and both are correct. Because you should be more careful. If it could be read in another way, you know, then we should be more careful. If it's read in another way and it still works, then no problem. You know, then you have two ways of reading that verse. That's actually the richness of Sanskrit, and that can happen. If it can be read in another way and that way doesn't make any sense, then that also shouldn't be a problem, because it doesn't make any sense. But Shankara will say, yeah, but even though it doesn't make any sense, maybe we should negate it anyway, just to be thorough. Okay. So here, Ascharyavat Pasyati Kascharenam. You know, there's so, as Swamiji always says when he gets to this, there's so much in this verse. We can talk about it in so many different ways, but let's just take the first one, Ascharyavat Pasyati. Pashyati means to see, the one who sees, someone sees this self and sees that as a tremendous wonder. Because first of all, yourself can't be seen, right? That's something right there. Yourself is not an object, right, to be seen. And yet, you see it. You see it because you are it. It's not the seeing in the sense of objectification. It's a recognition of really the conscious being because of which all things are seen. And in your experience, when you differentiate, as the teaching methodology causes you to do actually, when you're differentiating yourself, which is the self-evident conscious being because of which everything is known, when you are differentiating the objects of knowledge, the mithya, the objects of knowledge, from that self-evident subject, what is left to be seen is not a subject-object seeing, it's the self-shining of my own self. So in that sense, that seeing is a self-evident experience. And so we say, it is as though seen, because it is directly, immediately recognized as myself. It's not a non-experience. It's the taking away from myself all objectified experiences and leaving myself alone to be seen. But just like the self is known without a knower, the self is seen without a seer. Right? That's the type of recognition, because I'm the self-evident being. So what a wonder is that, you know, to actually recognize myself. What a surprise. What a surprise to recognize that I am what I've always sought, and that I myself, who've always wanted to live a day longer, don't have to worry about that anymore. For me, there's no time, there's no change. That is seen, that is recognized as my self-evident nature. It's absolutely recognized because I've differentiated myself from anything that can be objectified in the subject of time. So in yourself, the recognition of your own, let's say, self-experience or the self-evident nature of yourself, contains that knowledge. That experience, the recognition of your being is the recognition that there is no change for you, that your nature is whole and complete, that nothing can possibly happen to you because you're not an object bound by time. All of these things are recognized in the recognition of yourself. And then, of course, we say all of that too. But in the recognition of yourself, that tremendous beauty and freedom that you've always wanted to achieve, you recognize as the very nature of your being. And so what a wonder is that recognition. And it says, Ascharyavat Pasyati Kascharenam, Ascharyavat Vadati Tathaiva Chanyaha. And another thinks, what a wonder, you know, this Atma is talked about. We are using words. If the teacher uses words to talk about, to point to this Atma, which cannot be objectified and talked about with words, right? The self isn't an object to be able to say, well, you know, it's red and it's 5 feet tall or whatever. We don't have any words. You think of any given word, every single word you use, every single word we have available to us is only has meaning within duality. It's not like some words have come up to talk about the nature of something which cannot be objectified, cannot be known by you through your sense perception. So we have no words for the self. In fact, every word that we have that points to the self is really a word we use to point to something within duality. Like even every word, like even if you say the word consciousness, what is consciousness? Well, in the West, for us, it has many different, we, meanings. I don't know how exactly you said it in Swedish, but I can say, yeah, I'm conscious of that. Means I'm aware of that. You know, I'm a conscious person. Means, you know, I'm with it. I get it. I understand. I'm a conscious person. You don't mean, you know, I am consciousness. This person that I am is consciousness. We don't really even use it like that. You'll say, I'm conscious of that. I'm aware of that. You know, I'm a together person in that way. And then if I ask you, well, you are you a conscious being? I'll kind of look. Of course. Here's what if I ask you, are you a conscious being? Then what are you going to think? What do you mean by that? I'm not unconscious. I'm not inert. Why would you ask me something like that? What's the alternative? Are you a conscious being? It's like saying, are you stupid? You know? We don't use the word consciousness like that. We assume, of course, I'm a conscious being, right? And so if I use consciousness, it's using it differently. I'm conscious of that. I'm aware of that. You know, it's important that we all have consciousness around this issue. Not, I am a conscious being. Just imagine asking somebody that. It becomes like a joke, you know? Like you must mean the opposite. Are you a conscious being or not? It doesn't seem like it. Okay. So, how can we speak of it, you know? And yet, the whole teaching methodology is using words that, yes, they have a relative meaning, but when we put when the words are put together in particular ways, the relative meaning is knocked off, right? So if we say you are consciousness, which is existence, which is infinite, all of a sudden all of these words go, ah! Because none of these words now can point to something in the creation. So in the teaching methodologies, words are definitely used and they land on you, you know? But their relative meaning has to be stripped off in order for them to land on you, to point to you. And so you think, what a wonder, you know, that these words, you know, that myself is revealed by these words, that these words land on me. And in fact, we even use words in Nididhyasana, in contemplation, to land on me. Like Swamiji will often use words like if I say, aham means I, as a little mantra that is landing on myself, aham nityaha. That means, and so I say the aham nityaha. There's nothing, no aham, no I that's nitya, free from time in the world. And so that's all been negated. So I say, aham nityaha, and this word nitya lands on me. It becomes a word that lands on me. And so say if I'm just giving the mind a little structure, a little direction, in contemplating, so that I keep directing the flow of the mind just to be with me, so it gets to know that it actually has a me and is not me. Right? Mind has to recognize that. It has a me that it is not me. Or that the me that is always taken to belong to itself, it recognizes that it's the very adhishtana of the mind. It's the very support of the mind, the very truth of the mind, which itself has no independent being. It recognizes all of this. So you say, nityaha, aham nityaha, your mind. Nityaha resolves into you. You say, asangaha, aham asangaha, means I am like space unattached to everything. You know? What if I start out by teaching, let's use this as kind of an example. You are asangaha. You're not attached to anything. You are ananda. You are eternal, timeless ananda. You are asangaha. Okay? Okay, everybody? Okay. Okay? What does it mean? It doesn't mean anything. Yeah. Oops. It doesn't mean anything. The words don't mean anything. Because if you're just going to say it, you know, you're eternal, you're consciousness, these words only have meaning within duality. Eternal can mean I go on forever. You know? It doesn't mean timeless. If I say you're nitya, we'll say eternal, not timeless. What is timeless? What would that even mean? You are consciousness. What does that mean, really? You don't have to really work. It doesn't mean anything. None of the words mean anything, really, that we use until they're put together and enfolded in such a way that they land on yourself. So they become meaningful. The words become meaningful because they're unfolded in a way to direct your mind to the recognition of that which is timeless. So you understand the word timeless when you recognize yourself, right? But the words themselves are only used to point to yourself and say, ah, there is no time of change for me. That's my nature. So now nitya has a meaning because it's landed on you. You give the word the meaning. You're a sangha like space. Now, what if I just said that to you? You're a sangha. You're not attached to anything. I said, yeah, I guess I don't really have any real attachments. Isn't that sad? I'm not really attached to anything. Because what is it? No, I'm not, I have no attachments. Because I don't have any friends. I don't have any friends. I don't have any responsibilities. I don't care about anybody. I'm not attached to anything. You're a sangha. You should be happy for that. So these words have to one by one be handled, and then they do their job, and then these words become beautiful. Because when you say the word, it is filled with yourself. Right? Like, think about this, like if I say, for instance, if I say flower, the word flower, immediately a flower comes. Who knows which flowers come for all of us, but a flower comes as you say the word. Words are powerful. Words themselves evoke immediately their object. But if I say tree, or I say pot, or I say ocean, as soon as I say it, it comes, right? And so what if I say, as long as you're like this, what if I say, gagubuga? that's his word. I had gagubuga. What comes? Ajnanam, ignorance. Like, nothing comes. You just wait. You know? And so, but it's similarly, if I say, you are timeless, what comes? Confusion. No knowledge comes, not like flower, you know. No knowledge because you have no idea what it means, you know. How could I possibly be timeless? It's like doubt comes. What does she mean, timeless? What does that mean? But what about when those words are used in a teaching methodology that makes you recognize, ah, I am timeless, the fact of it? Then this word nitya, being free from time, if I say I am timeless, that goes, I am the only thing that is timeless, actually. That becomes, those words become wonders because they are filled with me. Just like flower or tree or night sky. These are filled with what they hold. You know, words are magical in that way. So what about when the words are loaded with yourself? Even if you say, are able, you'll be able to say, I am Ishwara. What about when you say that? What if you didn't know anything and I say, and you know that all you know is that Ishwara is what the Hindus call as God. And I just say, you are Ishwara. How could that be? How could that be? What jnana, what knowledge comes there? Or it's even worse if I say, you are God. Because then you really know that you have no clue. Maybe you didn't really understand what they mean by Ishwara, what they mean by God. But if I say, you are God. No, I'm not. No, I'm not. And when I was 18, one young boy, I think he's really stoned out of his mind, he's in New Orleans in kind of an alley that, you know, I don't know if you've been to, any of you have been to New Orleans, but it's just a total party town and everybody's walking around with Mai Tais and, you know, people are walking around playing their band, their instruments and all of this. It's just a huge party, really kind of an exciting place for young people to be. This guy, he was a young, kind of a young, nice guy. He was like 18 years old. And he just came up to me and he said, you're God. You are God. And even if that part of me kind of knows that in some just intuitive way that there's some truth in that, which I don't really know what it's about, but there's some truth. My reaction to him telling me that was not the best. My reaction was, it's time to go. It's time to go now. Because those words are not filled with myself or with Ishwara, an Ishwara that I know. But what about when you do know? And you say, I am Ishwara. That's those words are ascharyavat. They are a wonder. Because these words actually hold you like flower holds flower, or tree holds tree, or ocean holds ocean. Nitya, Ananda, Chaitanya, consciousness, all of these words just resolve right into the fact of it. And so the words themselves become a wonder. And so, this self which one speaks about, you know, those that is a wonder. And then again, Ascharyavachainam Anyaha Shrinoti, another who, just these are just different types of wonder, it's all of them. When you're hearing about it, Shrinoti. Shrinoti comes from this root Shri, from Shruti, Shravana. Shravana is, if we say Shrinoti, and we take it to mean one who experiences this, the Shravana, the exposure to the Vedanta, to the Upanishad. An Upanishad is not just an Upanishad. It's not something, a book to be read. The Upanishad is a pramana. It's a means of knowledge. It's a teaching methodology between the teacher and the student, where these words are actually used in such a way to reveal the self. That's how they're used. It's not a lecture. It's where the teacher's mind and the student's mind, hopefully there's no obstruction between us in any way, so that the only thing that's happening is this vision. So that the vision, the knowledge that is held in the mind of the teacher is the knowledge that is being experienced by the student. That is really Shravana. And so the teaching, the Shravana is the actually teaching, the actual wielding of the pramana, which is really what an Upanishad is. An Upanishad is really not a book to be read. It's a dialogue between teacher and student, which is then that dialogue, verse by verse, being understood by the teacher, because the teacher has also been taught that. That dialogue is that those words are passed on to the student, which are then unfolding the nature of yourself. So this self, which is being revealed by the teacher, is such a wonder. It's being revealed by the teacher only in the sense that this pramana is coming through the teacher to the student. But I think in truth, what's actually happening is this pramana is coming through the mind of the student to the mind of the mind of the teacher to the mind of the student, which are become one. It's like we're all existing in that same space without any obstruction. Without any obstruction. And so as that pramana comes through, the ones who are available for it see it, and then we all feel, because I remember feeling, this is exactly what I was wanting to hear. This is exactly what I was thinking. This is exactly what my question was. We all say that to each other all the time. Like, this is just for me, Bhagavan. And but people sometimes think the teacher is a mind reader or something. Like, how did she know? But she didn't know. He didn't know. Ishwara knew. Ishwara knows. Right? And this teaching is Bhagavan. It is Ishwara, you know. And so Ishwara knows. The whole Sangha, the whole mind, our collective mind is here. You know. And that collective mind draws out what needs to be, what each part of Bhagavan in this little room needs. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And why can we have it is because we're not in the way of it. That's why. That's why I said the other day, that's why we say the prayer. You know, may Bhagavan, you know, protect us. May he nourish us with this knowledge where our minds have tejas. You know, may there be no enmity to create any type of obstruction. Let this pramana flow. Let this pramana flow. That's our prayer. So then he says, after all of this, and it's also a wonder, in a sense, that having had the Shravana, that it still is not known. So I can give personally a lot of examples, so you don't feel bad about it. You know, you can be, this is the thing. Say the teacher is really knows how to wield the pramana. And for the teacher to know that, the teacher, whoever the teacher is, has to themselves have experienced it. Because then they've experienced that pramana. That's how they know. You know? Otherwise, you don't know about that. You don't know how to wield that pramana in such a way that the teacher and student should actually both be seeing it as it's taking place. So you have no idea what that is unless you've been taught utilizing that pramana. And so the teacher knows the pramana, and so as that pramana is taking place, so giving benefit of doubt to the teacher, that the pramana is taking place, now this is the amazing thing, you are here. The Atma, the self that you are, could not be more present. You could not be more present. And the teaching itself is just pointing to you who are right immediately, directly here as me, as your own me, the self that is here. So you couldn't be more present, okay? But here's this teaching is all taking place. The pramana is being wielded. So now I'm thinking of Mampuja Swamiji wielding it. There's nobody better. You know, he's the master of all masters. So he's weaving this pramana. And for the student, nothing is happening. Nothing happens. There's just a bunch of words flying at me, you know. Just words flying at me. That happens to us all the time, actually. Words are flying at me, and nothing is happening. And that is because my mind is distracted by whatever issues or whatever emotional things are taking place, you know, whatever hurts or feelings are there, that even though this wonderful pramana is flowing at me and I am completely present to it, no matter what's going on in your mind, you're completely present to it, you know, because your mind is distracted or lost in its feelings, I would say, or lost in its worries, or lost in its doubts, you know, or its concerns, even though you're trying to listen, these concerns or feelings or emotions trump. No, we can't use that word anymore. That word's out of our vocabulary. You know, my own emotional state, my own emotional state takes precedence. Yeah. I can't free myself from the emotional state for these words to land on me. Yeah. I can't free myself from my raga dvesha. It's something I really want, that I really need, and that's what I'm concerned about. And so even if I'm trying to be present, my mind is pulled away by that emotional self or my likes and dislikes or whatever it is. And so this beautiful knowledge can come in at me and I know it and I'm trying to listen, but I'm not really present. And so even though I'm here and I'm listening and maybe I have all value also for it, still other things are happening. And so that class is kind of a waste and it also lasts for really a long time. Because I'm kind of stuck there. I'm not part of it. But I'm only not part of it because my mind at that particular time is not available. So in that sense, we probably lost several classes, you know, in the course of our in the course of our shravana, you know, in the years of our shravana. You know, you don't need to count them, but I'm sure you can. Everybody, I don't think I'm alone. I know I'm not actually. That everybody's going to say, yeah, we lost a few. We lost a few. We were there, but nothing happened at all. That's why, even the, and especially the Gita, the Bhagavad Gita, which itself is held in esteem as an Upanishad, even though it's not really, it's given that sanction as being an Upanishad because it's taught by Bhagavan, it's taught by Krishna. And so it gets to be an Upanishad, you know, considered and valued as an Upanishad. And the Bhagavad Gita, in a sense, gives equal weight or so much weight, not only to the Shravana, who are being exposed to this knowledge, but how to handle our mind to give it that antakarana shuddhi, to give it that shanti, that relaxation that can allow me to sit and have that knowledge pour in, where my mind is just available. How to be have that emotional freedom to be kind of, you know, not totally consumed by my raga dvesha or my likes and dislikes or my judgmental self, you know, or my critical self that's either directed toward me or toward others. So this time we spend on how to be with our mind, you know, how to take care of our mind, how to take care of the unconscious, all of these, how to be with other people, you know, how to have openness toward the people in my life who I'm afraid of. Remember we talked about this abhayam that evoke fear in me because I'm afraid of my mind. How to be in the world like that. Why is that important? So it's this whole antakarana shuddhi, and this is something I don't think is often understood. This purity of mind, this using all of the teachings in the Bhagavad Gita and throughout the Shastra that we use for the antakarana shuddhi, for that sattva. Sattva means the relaxed, quiet, available mind. That is so that I can gain knowledge. That's why we want this antakarana shuddhi, so that I can gain knowledge. Because without that relative peacefulness, that relative dharma, my mind, even though I'm sitting before the teacher, I have all of that grace of being brought to this teaching, my mind has issues that stop it from being available. And so we have to, especially here we are in Kali Yuga, for those of you who know what that is, I'll just tell you just briefly. If you look at the whole manifestation of creation from its first fresh manifestation until the last, it's divided into four yugas, four large, gigantic periods of time. Kali Yuga is the shortest. It's in some 400,000 years, something like that. 439 is 1,000 years. That's the shortest one. The others are hundreds of thousands of years. This Kali Yuga is like the... Bhagavan is really tired. It's like dark and night. But this is the example they use. In the first Yuga, everything is fresh and bright morning, you know? And the cow of Dharma is standing on four legs. Imagine the cow being representative of Dharma. Dharma is standing on four legs. So cow is the most auspicious of the animals. It's standing on four legs, you know. So it's firm. You can't just knock it over, you know. Cows are so gentle and sweet, but try to knock one over. The cow of Dharma is on four legs. In the next yuga, as we go, you know, more into noon and afternoon, the cow of Dharma loses a leg because a Dharma is starting to slowly take hold. Raga dvesha is letting me have my way. The ahankara is becoming a little bit more overpowering. It loses a leg. That's not quite so firm, but still standing. It is still standing. Not quite so firm. Third yuga, another leg is missing. So now in the third yuga, the yuga before this one, the cow of Dharma is now trying to stand on two legs. That's rickety. That is very hard for it, very hard for it to keep its balance. But it has a chance. Very difficult, though. In the fourth yuga, our yuga, the cow of Dharma is only on one leg, you know. And so it's suffering. Dharma is suffering. Because the cow is still the cow. Dharma is still Dharma. But its support system is not there. It's lost its support system. It only has one leg, you know. That is our situation. And so, in a sense, in this world that we live in today, we are not standing upon Dharma. It's like we're underwater. We're underwater, trying to paddle up to come to be able to stand and to stand on four legs when we don't have the support system, you know? Because if you just look, there's a lot of pain in the world. There's a lot of pain in our families and our family structure. There's a lot of pain in terms of all of the different religions of the world. They're all having trouble with themselves and with each other. You know, those we used to be held by our religions. We used to be held by our families. But now it's hard to find a family that's even still together, you know. We're not held by our religions. We're certainly not held by our governments. I mean, they're getting worse and worse and worse. And we, America's the leader now. Leader in shocking. America is shocking the world. How could this possibly happen? I mean, it has been going downhill for a long time, but this trumps it. Now we have to use the word. Yeah, so it's just an amazing thing. So we can't even rely on education, or we can't rely on our police force. We can't rely on our hospitals or our medical care or our prisons or to be something that is useful and helpful to people. We can't really rely on anything, you know. And so that means that we've grown up in a world that is where the cow of Dharma is only on one leg, and so we have to, and yet we are Dharmanishas, we are Dharmas. You would not be a Dharmi if you're not here. You are a Dharmi. That's what's primary for you, or you never make it here. And yet we need support, and we need to know how to handle the wounds of a Dharma. We need to learn how to handle the wounds and heal the wounds of a Dharma. You know? And so this teaching, the Bhagavad Gita, is so beautiful for that, you know. And then, of course, we know more, like with psychology. Like Swamiji added on psychology because he was so shocked that just the pramana itself wasn't taking care of everything, some certain problems. And so he really studied and learned. He understood inner child work. He understood complexes and all of these type of things to help us make our mind, instead of being like that example he uses of like a newspaper trying to carry coals, that the mind is actually strong and clean and clear and can be available. So all of these things about how to be with our mind and how to sort it out so that it has a natural, gets back to its natural condition. The natural condition is to have shanti, you know, to have tejas, to have brilliance and energy, to have dharma. It's because it has dharma. It's held by dharma. And so you've got to get your four legs back. That's what we're doing. We're being given back our four legs in this one-legged society of Kali Yuga. That is the way, at least, that it's dealt with from a Vedic perspective. But it has its own beauty. And so a text like the Upanishads is a yoga shastra. They say yoga, karma yoga, karma yoga shastra, as well as an Upanishad. So both the shravana is there, and the shravana for gaining this knowledge, you know, it's a means of knowledge for gaining the knowledge, but it's also a dharma shastra, It's a yoga shastra for teaching us how to gain, regain the deep shanti in our mind. And so both are necessary. In fact, in the teaching, we say there are two nishtas, two commitments. One is called upaya nishta. There is a commitment to gaining knowledge. That means the commitment is to shravana, manana, nididhyasana. This teaching takes place in this threefold way. Shravana means I'm exposing myself to the teaching, which is being heard. This teaching is being heard from beginningless time, because it comes from Bhagavan, according to the tradition. It's not somebody's idea. This teaching belongs to Ishwara, it belongs to the creation, it's coming through. You know? And so that shravana is my exposure to this teaching, and then all of the questions, also it also includes all of the questions around, well, what is the vision of the Upanishads? What is it actually saying? So maybe for me, I remember when Swamiji would finish a class, we would have a little satsang after all the time. So I would always go and I would have my questions. What did that mean? What did that mean? Because I wanted to really deeply understand what Swamiji was saying. I wanted to understand the vision of the Upanishads. But then there's also what we call manana. Then you say, well, I don't see why it's like that. Say, Swamiji, say I had a doubt and I asked Swamiji, what was the point? What is it saying there, Swamiji? And he tells me and I said, why couldn't it be like this? Why does it have to be like that? So now I'm going outside of, I understand what you're saying that the Upanishad says, but how come there's only one self? Why couldn't there be many Purushas? Why couldn't there be many selves? You know? Or why isn't the self just the brain? That's more Western. You know? Why isn't the self just the brain? You know? Why couldn't that be so? And so all of these types of questions are now confronting the vision of the Upanishad and need to be answered. Why couldn't it be like this? The Upanishad says this, why couldn't it be like that? That's manana. So all those questions, you know, need to be cleared, or you don't know, because you say, well, it could be like that, but let's just push that away. But your mind doesn't push anything away. Say you have a doubt, you don't want to deal with it, and the Upanishad says it's like this, so let's just accept it, even though it could be that way. Let's just accept it, you know? That doubt doesn't go away. It's lingering there, nagging at you, and you're just not paying attention. So these doubts are the doubts, the understanding of the vision of the Upanishad, so your mind is clear, that commitment to that, and to removing all of the doubts. Is that commitment, manana, needs to be there too. And then you need nididhyasana, which nididhyasana is kind of like this. The shravana clear. Maybe not, but let's say that it is. It doesn't have to be for nididhyasana, but I kind of understand manana, yeah. But Swamiji, you know, why do I keep taking myself to be the body then? If I'm not the body, why do I keep taking myself to be the body? Why do I keep identifying with my mind? You know? That's why nididhyasana is needed, because you've spent beginningless, if it's needed, it need not be needed, but usually for us it's needed. From beginningless time, you have been totally identified, your mind has totally identified itself with you. You know? From the standpoint of the mind, that I am me. I am me. Right? And I, this me, am this body. I am this body-mind complex. So what is actually a body-mind sense organs, which is part of Ishwara, part of the universe, having me for its adhishtana, for its satyam, for its truth, for its unchangeless being, from the standpoint of the mind, no, I am that. And so all of this teaching is taking place, and I get glimpses, and I see, and I walk out the door, and I am this. Teaching? Ah, yes, I see, I am that. Out the door, I am this. Because of beginningless identification. Not at any fault of any person. It's nobody's fault. It's the nature of the creation. That from the standpoint of the jiva, that identification is beginningless, or you would be born with self-knowledge. You're not born with self-knowledge, you're born as part of Ishwara, you know? And because you have a mind, and that mind enjoys consciousness, the consciousness of the Atma, which is the self in all beings, first that mind says, I am the conscious being, because it's never, when it's ever said, it's never not the conscious being. So all of your samskaras, all of your associations are only from the standpoint of me as this limited being and my ananda being out here. That's reasonable, and everybody agrees with me. So I am not the weird one here. Everybody agrees. I am this body. Everybody thinks, I am this body, and my this body, mind, sense organs. I'm subject to birth and death, and I want to become happy and whole and complete, and I want to live a day longer, you know? All the things you are is what you want. You know? But you have beginningless lifetimes with that misidentification. And so with nididhyasana, whether like we do, it happens in glimpses at the time of teaching, but also like when we spend time sitting and doing these guided meditations, for instance, which are always twofold. They're dealing with the complexes and problems that we have in our mind that stop the mind from being able to just see, recognize. And then they that set up allow me to just be with myself. To be with myself and to be myself. Right? It provides time. Time for that. So that's why in the nididhyasana we always include it in this teaching, because it just gives time, and then that becomes a thing that you naturally do whether you're walking or talking or sitting. You know, it's that continual recognition. Like you can say nityo hum, perhaps, when you're able to say that, or I am timeless, and those words just, you can even, they resolve in yourself. Or if you've been exposed yet to the Mandukya Upanishad, when you say Om, that word just resolves into the truth of your being, to Ishwar. Say Om, that's enough. That's why a jnani, like saying, I know that our Swamiji, Vandi Shaman, is Om. Says Om. Om Namah. That's all you need. That's all you need, because Om is Ishwara. Om is Ishwara with the silence of the Om. The Om is Ishwara. And the silence of the Om is Brahman. So you say Om, by the time you're done, you're Brahman. Om. Okay? So you say Om, Namaha. You say Om, then Namaha is all is well. All Om, all is well. All is Ishwara. Om, Namaha. So when you, at some point, when you know, some weird things happening in the world. Om. Because the word has meaning. If it doesn't have meaning, it's just a nice sound. But this word Om, which is considered so sacred, you know, it has a lot of meaning. So. So even though it's a wonder that we don't understand all this teaching is going to, you're hearing all the whole thing, you don't understand. There's a lot of reasons for that. You know. But those reasons, it's a wonder in a sense, but it's very understandable in another sense. And we're here, the self is here, the teaching is here, and there's all this swamjiga, all this gadabut, means all this crazy stuff going on in the mind. I'm here, teaching is here, everything is fine, but my mind is... And it's painful. So pain, you need to take care of the pain. And you need to know how to do that in a way that is meaningful. You know? We don't want to drink it away or smoke it away. You know? We don't want to just... I mean, we can turn on a movie or something. But that's a nice distraction. We have lots of distractions. But that's all they are, is band-aids. They're just distractions. We want to heal that pain. So I have a deep, beautiful, beautiful shanti. And then this knowledge just pours right in, because I am here. There's no obstruction, no problem between the teacher and the student. And so then, what a wonder. Oh, that's good. A little bit of side letter.
Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnamat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.